Welcome back to the Article Show. Today I'm speaking with Jan Lampret, who is in Johannesburg, a South African guy. Please tell us a little bit about your story, Jan.
Hi there, Tara. I'm actually a Boer. I'm Afrikaans. My family came from South Africa and moved to Rhodesia, which is now known as Zimbabwe. They moved there in 1948. A large part of our family moved there. And that is where I was born. And Rhodesia in those days was a British colony. And that is where I grew up in the 70s. And at that time, a war was raging. In fact, all the African liberation wars started raging in the 60s and 70s into the 80s until eventually all the white colonial territories in southern Africa were taken over. The Portuguese had the country of Angola, which in physical size is a quarter of the size of the USA. They had Mozambique, which is almost a similar size. Rhodesia was the size of France. Then there's Southwest Africa, now known as Namibia. That was a German and Boer colony. And then, of course, South Africa. And these wars raged across southern Africa for decades. And the whites eventually lost in all these places. And what's left of white people in Africa, most of them are now in South Africa. So I also moved to South Africa in 1981. So our family left Zimbabwe. We didn't want to stay there under black communist rule. And just a note, Rhodesia rebelled against Britain. So I don't know what your knowledge is of the history of that, but yeah, that is the basic background.
Okay. Yeah, I've learned very, very little about South Africa. Obviously, didn't learn anything about it in school. So all I know is kind of like, you know, what friends have told me or what I've seen on the internet, but I haven't really investigated very much. What I am concerned about, though, obviously, is the whites in South Africa appear to be in a very difficult situation right now. Maybe you can tell us a bit about that.
Yes, the whites are in a hot spot. That is true. It's not all bad. You do get people who run around saying that we are on the verge of genocide. That is an overstatement. I only became politically active, just to give you a little bit more background, I only became politically active in South Africa in the year 2000. Until then, I'd stayed out of all of politics altogether. I had no interest. I just lived in South Africa. I'm a computer programmer, and I worked here in Johannesburg. But I always kept in touch with ex-Rhodesians and the happenings in Zimbabwe because a lot of these happenings in other black countries, just a little bit of background for you. All the governments of the countries of South Africa, Namibia, Angola, Zimbabwe, and Mozambique, all of them were funded and armed by Russia and China. So all the wars that took place, all the wars and all the unrest and violence that you know of that's ever happened in southern Africa was physically funded by Russians and Chinese. They gave them guns. They even gave them tanks and in some cases even aircraft. So the governments of these countries all started out as communist parties. They're actually blacks who've adopted communism, and their prime loyalty is to Russia and China. And these blacks are anti-white. The Western world wants these blacks to fall into the Western world fold. And that is what Britain and America have been trying to do. But deep down, these blacks are actually communists, and they believe in certain principles. They believe, for example, that they must seize the land, because that is what communists did in the Soviet Union. They seized the land. They starved 5 million people to death in the Ukraine. Now, some of these blacks here, they believe these things. They believe that communism is the way forward for them. And in Zimbabwe, the biggest success of the Chinese was the guy who rules Zimbabwe now. His name is Robert Mugabe. And he said many nasty things about Britain. I don't know if you've taken note of his statements. But he's actually the biggest warmonger in Southern Africa. He actually fought wars in Mozambique and in Central Africa, all in favor of other blacks who are communists. And these guys hate the whites, they hate capitalism, and they ultimately want to destroy them. Now, how I got involved was in the year 2000, all of a sudden, Robert Mugabe began seizing the farms in Zimbabwe. There were 5,000 white farmers there. He started seizing their farms, and people were occupying their farms and physically driving the whites off their land. And in some cases, in many cases, those farms had actually been bought by the whites under black rule. So they weren't farms that those whites had always owned. They'd bought it legally and paid for it under black rule. But Mugabe realized, I'll tell you what started the problem there. Mugabe realized that his new political opposition, there was a new black political opposition, and this black political opposition was funded by the white farmers. So when he saw that his political opposition is growing and is going to beat him at elections, which they subsequently did, they beat him at several elections, but he just cheated and he stayed in power. But he then turned the focus on these white farmers because he saw these whites are succeeding and these whites are making big money and these whites are now a threat. So he came up with his bogus reasons as to why he needed to seize their land. And from 2000 to about 2010, he managed to destroy almost all the white farms in Zimbabwe. And what he did that most people don't know is that he targeted farmers according to their loyalty. He saw which farmers were loyal to him and which were funding his opposition. And then he went after those who were funding his opposition. So that is how he eventually broke the last of the whites of Zimbabwe. Because about two-thirds of the whites who lived there when I was there in the 70s, two-thirds of us left in the period 1980 to 1985. So about a third of them were left in Zimbabwe. Anyway, when I saw this happening in 2000, and I was following it closely, and they were sometimes killing farmers and killing their wives and stuff and burning their houses, when I saw that, I knew this is bad, bad news. These are communists. They are determined. They're going to go after the whites. And it's time to warn the whites of South Africa. So what I did was I wrote a book called Government by Deception. And Government by Deception was my expose of the government of South Africa. That is of Nelson Mandela and the ANC. Because you people in Britain have only heard good things about Nelson Mandela and the ANC. And you've only heard bad things about the Boers and apartheid. So I wrote this book called Government by Deception where I drew parallels because all these blacks worked together. I drew parallels between Zimbabwe and South Africa, and it was a warning to the whites of South Africa, especially the Afrikaans people, to say that what you are seeing in Zimbabwe is going to happen in South Africa as well. Now also, in Angola and Mozambique, the Portuguese people there fled en masse when they lost their war. There were hundreds of thousands of whites in Angola and Mozambique. They all fled. They got in their cars. They fled the countries immediately. So the whites of Rhodesia were the biggest white population under black rule. And then, of course, the blacks came back for round two to knock the whites out. And they pretty much have succeeded. But I could see You see, just another thing. South Africa is like the United States of Africa. That is how powerful South Africa is. In terms of industry and economics, it is more powerful than most of the black countries in Africa, dozens of them put together. So this is the most developed part of Africa, and it's got a strategic position with naval bases and stuff like that, which the Americans want, which the Russians want. So South Africa is a very important country, and Britain is actually the country that created South Africa, because Britain conquered the Boers and then brought all their colonies together and created South Africa about a century ago. Now, the whites, when I saw what these communists were doing and all the liberal talk in South Africa and overseas about how good things were going to be in South Africa, I realized this is rubbish. And I wrote my book, and then I started a website to promote the book, and I called the website African Crisis. And it still exists. It's called africancrisis.org. And it was my attempt to warn the whites of South Africa that big trouble is coming down the line. And among the things that I thought about and investigated, and I went to see generals, I even went to visit military people and generals, and I asked them for their input, and I wrote this book based on the information I had. And one of the scenarios that I was talking about was I had a chapter that I called The White's Last Stand. And that was a future race war that at some point the blacks are going to try to knock us out for once and for all. And coming back to the problems of South Africa now, we seem to be heading in that direction where there are blacks, not all blacks, but there are blacks who are determined to try and see if they can now grab more stuff, because they took a lot of things from us under black rule. They have already seized huge amounts of farmland in South Africa using various legal methods. There were methods whereby blacks could claim land, and they did. They claimed huge chunks of territory, enormous pieces of land that they've taken over. Most of the farms that they took over have collapsed, I must tell you. 9 out of 10 of the farms that go under black rule, the blacks aren't really interested in it, and it collapses. But even so, these blacks are driven because they believe that they need to go after businesses and farms. And there are certain radical blacks in South Africa now who are trying to stoke big racial troubles. One of them is a guy called Julius Malema. He is an open communist. He's a young guy. He's got a following of a couple of million. And there are others as well. But he's the most, high profile. But these blacks nowadays are starting to look at bigger things. They want to go after banks. They want to go after mines. They're talking about all kinds of big things. Even today, I saw news headlines about them going after the mines. Now, this is where we've got lots of issues starting to come up. And this year already, let me just give you a little bit of other background that you may or may not be aware of. In the last 20 years, there's been a campaign to murder white farmers. Have you heard of that? Now, in that campaign, they've killed about 4,000 farmers in the last 20 years. And people who've gone and investigated have seen that these often involved torture and other kinds of things. So they've been destroying our farming community and trying to drive the whites off farmland. And they've done other things where they go and they occupy land illegally. But this year, they seem to be moving into a whole new level of, let's call it, racial attack. Some of it is coming from the government itself, and other aspects of it is coming from other black politicians who have got their own followings and are doing their own things. This year, three things have already happened that are big and that are different. The first was in January this year, in one day, blacks across the Cape province started about 100 fires in one day, and they were starting to burn down farms and burn down white people's houses. So that was the first thing that happened. The second thing that happened about a month or two ago was in the little towns of Kulini and Lichtenburg. There were blacks who began rioting and they tore up the town. They physically tore down the main street of the town, smashed every business, looted every business, and they started setting fire to the houses of the whites. And now, just last week, I think it was about a week ago, there was a huge fire in the town of Knysna in the Cape. And this fire started when there were high winds. It was near the coast. But there is testimony that 23 fires were started by blacks in these high winds. And this town is mostly white. And it burned down a huge chunk of the town. So I'm still busy investigating that. I've done videos about Lichtenburg and Kulini. And I'm going to go to Kulini in a few days' time because there's a court case that relates to all this. But there are some things that are indicating that blacks are trying to make big moves. And another big move is that under black rule, we've had so much crime that it is estimated that something like 70,000 white people have been murdered in the last 20 years. And this crime is so bad. Now, the way that we dealt with it was people started forming private security companies. And these private security companies are the main thing that have kept us alive all these 20 years. And these private
security... Just so listeners know, the white population of South Africa is like 5 million or something, which is less than the population of the whole of London, you know, the city of London. So for 70,000 people to be killed, you know, that's actually a good chunk of the people, right?
It's very big. So many whites, in fact, I will tell you, more whites have died under black rule than whites who died during wars.
Mm-hmm.
That is how bad it is. And our actual population at the last census was 4.2 million. And the blacks are over 50 million. So they outnumber us 11 to 1. And, yeah, so these are big threats. Now, with regard to the security companies, we've taken so many security precautions over the years to be able to live without being killed that we've been very successful, and these security companies, many of them are owned by whites, but the employees are mostly blacks. These security companies are the only thing that's really kept us alive. Now the government is busy talking about shutting them all down. So that is a huge potential nightmare. I don't know how far they will go. The government also tried about 8 years ago to take our guns away. They were somewhat successful, but we still have quite a lot of firearms in our hands. They aren't exactly AK-47s, but we're not totally defenseless. So that's just the background of where we are.
Mm-hmm. So the government in South Africa, about 50 years ago, it was a white rule government, and obviously famously had apartheid, which is like a form of segregation, I believe. And since that changed, I mean, what changes have you seen? Has the demographics shifted a lot, the number of whites and blacks?
Okay. Under apartheid was the proper term for apartheid was separate development. The idea was actually to break South Africa into states and to give blacks some of their territory and whites would have some of their territory. That was the goal of apartheid. But there were blacks who were, like I say, communist-inspired, and the elites were behind them. Also, the rich. You won't believe it, but the rich whites of South Africa, the very rich, they actually were in favor of destroying the Boers and white power. And there's actually a video that I want to do about the assassination of Dr. Verwoerd, who was our prime minister. In the time since black rule came, the blacks started out with a lot of rules for things that they wanted that they thought would even up the playing field. Let's call it that way. So they said, okay, we are now equal, but because of the past, there will be affirmative action. So the blacks, for example, instituted affirmative action, and that affirmative action has been there for over 20 years. So they've instituted it, even though they are the majority, and they have said that only 9 or 10% of all employees may be white, regardless of your skills. So the effect of that was to drive lots of whites out of their jobs. There are probably 800,000 out of the 4.2 million whites who are without work at all. I myself lost my job at the end of last year. I worked for a bank. I was a computer programmer, and I too was driven out of my work. So one of the big demographic changes that has taken place is in business. They have driven lots of white people out of their jobs. The very top management of the biggest companies are still white, but they are only the people at the very top. But in general, at the lower levels, whites have lost their jobs on a huge scale. And now, after all these years, the economy is also starting to implode. Black mismanagement, bad rule, and stuff like that has been causing other problems. And South Africa, even the elite, even those super rich who were against the whites, even the elite have now started turning against the government. And recently, I think it was Moody's, said that South African bonds were now of junk status. And just 2 weeks ago, they downgraded the five biggest banks in South Africa. These banks control 95% of all banking in South Africa. All five biggest banks were downgraded. They are now one level above what is called not investment grade. So they're pretty much heading towards junk status. And I think that the business people, the rich were not unhappy about the move away from apartheid. They didn't care because they were going to be rich under black rule anyway, and they were sure that they had the black politicians in their hands. But they've also been losing that grip, and now what you're getting for the first time ever is that the rich are worried about South Africa. They are physically losing money, and their businesses are going downhill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're in Europe and in America and Australia, we still have predominantly white governments, but because of the demographic change, which is happening very rapidly since about the 1960s, you know, we're starting to see these kind of affirmative action programs, and I think that, you know, it makes sense that the economy would be suffering as a result of those. But did you guys actually, I mean, have you always been like less than 10% of the South African population? Or is that something that happened over time, like a demographic change?
You know, now you ask an interesting question. The blacks in Africa never were that many. In fact, there are parts of South Africa that blacks did not inhabit at the time that whites came here. Whites came here in the 1650s at the same time that they were going to America. The whites Now, you must understand as well, there are different kinds of blacks. The black people that you are used to calling black, they are known as the Bantu. And they come from Central Africa and West Africa. Now, the Bantu have never lived in Southern Africa in ancient times. They've only moved into the southern part of Africa over the last 1,000 years. Blacks have probably only been in South Africa for perhaps even only 600 years. They only beat the whites by a couple of 100 years. When the whites came to the southern tip of Africa, they started moving northwards, and they met the blacks in the Eastern Cape at a place at the Great Fish River. That is where whites were moving north and blacks were moving south, and they first clashed at the Great Fish River. The white population of South Africa in the 1940s, a quarter of the population of South Africa was white. Whites were 25% of the population, and that was in the 1940s. That's less than 100 years ago. Now we're down to 9%. So whites, and even in Zimbabwe, whites in Zimbabwe were not that many. Whites in Rhodesia at its peak, when I was a kid, there were 250,000 whites and 6 million blacks. So we were outnumbered about 20 to 1 in Zimbabwe. The number of whites left in Zimbabwe now is about 30,000. So you can say more than 90% of the whites left Zimbabwe. And in the case of Angola, there used to be 600,000 whites. Almost all of them are gone. And in Mozambique, there was probably also around 200,000 or more. They are all gone. So Southern Africa used to have a pretty decent white population. At its peak, the white population may have been in the order of about 7 million in the 1960s. That was probably at its peak. Now we're down to 4.2 million. And the blacks, in the meantime, their population has shot through the roof. But what nobody points out is that under white rule, black populations exploded because of better medical services. If it was not for whites, the black population would never have achieved the proportion that it did, because blacks were dying from diseases. And under apartheid, do you know that the biggest hospital in the world was created under apartheid for black people? It is called Baragwanath Hospital. And under apartheid, it was created for the blacks of Soweto. It's the biggest hospital in the world. Whites, in fact, the best medical equipment in South Africa was in Baragwanath. And doctors from Europe used to regularly come to Baragwanath and do operations on blacks. So people must also be careful of all the negative things that you've heard about apartheid, because there's lots of stuff that's been twisted and twisted out of context as well.
Mm-hmm. If I recall correctly, I heard some statistics on the amount of tax paid by white South Africans, who are obviously an extreme minority in South Africa. Do you know those statistics? I think I heard it was something like over 90% of the taxes are actually paid by whites, even though they're less than 10% of the population.
Yes, you are quite right. The actual tax base of South Africa, although the official population of South Africa is over 50 million people, the actual taxpayer base is about 4.5 million. Most of the tax base is actually white. And that tax money is then given out, I heard, but I don't know how up to date this is, but the last I heard several years ago, that taxpayer base funds at least 15 million black people directly. They gain things from that. And another thing, the government of South Africa has used these funds to build houses for blacks on a large scale, that in itself is a whole other story, because there was a time when whites were busy building houses for blacks in the 1980s, and the blacks themselves sabotaged that. But that's a whole other story. The black government has been building houses using white taxpayer money, and they've built huge numbers of houses all over South Africa. And these are called RDP houses. And RDP was something like redistribution something, was the redistribution plan. And I've been to the townships. I've seen the houses. In fact, Tara, I don't know if you know, but there are also white squatter camps. And I've been there, and I've got film footage. And unfortunately, with the banning of all my videos on YouTube, because I've lost 12 channels on YouTube, and I've got probably 200 videos. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to put up all the South African and Rhodesian videos on my website at historyreviewed.com. And there you will see actual film footage. I've been to the townships. I've been to white squatter camps. And the biggest white squatter camp is a place called Munsieville. And whites live right next to a black township. And in that film footage, the whites have had to build their own little shacks and houses using planks and stuff like that, because they are not allowed to build permanent structures. The blacks living right next to them have got houses, properly built government houses with foundations. They've got solar water heating, everything, electricity, and the whites live right next to them, and they just have to make do as best they can.
Yeah, I'm curious to know, what do you think that the majority of whites in South Africa think or feel about this? You know, do they feel it's justified, or are they resentful about this? Do they see it as a problem?
You know, now you raise a very interesting question. Is there resentment? The biggest resentment that I've come across among whites is that whites are unhappy about affirmative action. We've been living under black rule for 23 years. And, you know, apartheid, from the day apartheid started until apartheid ended, it was only 48 years. The blacks have ruled now for almost half the period of time that apartheid existed. And never at any time have the blacks said that affirmative action will end. And in fact, how they did affirmative action in the beginning was they did a bit of a twist, and I think the rich were involved in this. They did a bit of a twist, and they said the following. They said that white women had been oppressed, therefore white women will not be subject to affirmative action. They'll be regarded as having been formerly oppressed. So what you saw until, let's say, in the first 20 years, what you saw was white men were losing their positions everywhere and being driven out everywhere. And white women were actually moving up and being promoted to high levels. In the bank that I worked in, all of our higher ranking bosses were white women, either non-whites or white women. Anyway, in the last few years, the last 2 or 3 years, the black government has said that now white women will also have to be subject to affirmative action. So now they're pushing white women out in the same way that they were pushing white men out. So affirmative action has not eased off, it's actually tightened up. And whites are unhappy, and I will tell you what happened. Even when I was driven out of my job last year and I was starting to look around, I spoke to some non-whites in other companies who I'd worked with. And I wrote to one who had been very friendly to me, a manager. I said to him, are there any opportunities in your bank for me? I've got 36 years experience as an IT guy in software. And the non-white wrote back to me and he said, there's a big push to bring in more blacks. And he said, we have to bring them in even if they can't do the job. Even if they can't do the job, we have to employ them. There will be no opportunities for you. So that is the situation now. There's a huge drive everywhere to drive the whites out flat out. And even in the days before when, you know, even though now they openly admit they're bringing in people who can't do the job, the point is that even in the years before, they were bringing in people who were badly skilled. And so this affirmative action has just been to the detriment of whites, and it's embittered many whites because whites have lost their jobs and have been replaced by people of lesser skill. And I'll tell you another thing I've seen. This I saw with my own eyes. This happened to me. I was in a situation where I saw whites being driven out of their jobs, like I was in IT. And, for example, in one case, a white woman, a white Afrikaans woman, she worked with me, and she was doing a certain job, and she was doing it alone. She was looking after a system all by herself. They eventually got rid of her. They made life uncomfortable for her, and she left. And then what they did is they replaced her with about 10 black people. So that is how they operate. And it's all bad news for whites. Whites also can't get promoted. I worked for the bank for 14 years. Never once did I get an opportunity at promotion. Never once. And, yeah, that is hard work. So I would say that when it comes to jobs, there's a lot of deep embitterment among whites. Whites have asked many times, when is this affirmative action going to come to an end? And there's no indication from the blacks that it will ever come to an end. Other areas where they've discriminated against whites are in business. They've made it so that whites in a white-owned company cannot tender for certain contracts. You have to have a black partner. If you don't have a black partner, you can't tender for certain contracts. That is called BEE, Black Economic Empowerment. And yeah, so whites have been mostly unhappy about jobs, but also business. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the other thing is land. And then the other thing is, if you have a company that you've created yourself, and you've now got a company and it's been successful, and you have 500 or more employees, then affirmative action applies to you, and you have to immediately start replacing whites with blacks. And if you don't, you get big fines, big fines.
Right, so small businesses can't really grow, I mean, without being handicapped by unskilled workers. Yeah, I imagine this also applies to university. I mean, why wouldn't it?
You know, the universities have always been a hotbed of leftism and communism, and they've driven whites out of those places long ago. At one point I did work for myself, and in the late 1980s, early 1990s, I did some work for one university here in Johannesburg, a very famous one. And then already, when I was walking around there, 9 out of 10 staff were black. So that was in the 1990s already.
Okay. So, I mean, the situation you guys are in, like you're less than 10% of the population, there's just no chance that you're going to be able to vote in, you know, politicians who are going to advocate for white South Africans, you know, well-being or needs at all. So, I mean, do you not just see that the thing's getting progressively worse? How could they possibly get better?
Yes, now you're getting into the thing. The whole political system is so rigged against us that, yes, we have nothing we can do. The only thing we could do is vote for people, and what few people we can get into parliament or into local government, we can use those people to the best of our ability. So that has been happening here and there where it's possible. Like at a local government level, you vote in a white, and that white looks after your suburb and the surrounding suburbs, and they try their best to assist you. So that is, those are the legal methods that people have followed. I don't know if you've ever studied the little town of Oranje or heard of it.
Yeah, I think I've heard of it. Small Christian community. Is that right?
Right. Yes. Oranje was an experiment that was where whites decided these were Afrikaans people. It's actually based on a book that a professor wrote in the 60s. There was a professor in South Africa who said that the future of the white, and this was then already, the future of the white is that the whites must go and create their own state. They must live by themselves and look after themselves. Because that is also the other thing. With regard to things that are causes of embitterment, I must add crime and the police. Whites are very embittered about the police doing nothing. And Tara, it's very bad. In South Africa, when crimes take place, the police most of the time don't even pitch up to the scene of the crime. Do you know that there was even a newspaper that published an article that said at least one murder per day is never investigated by the police? The police won't even investigate certain murders. And as for lesser crimes like robberies, and of course some of it's violent, eh? They come into your house, they put a gun to your head. One of my neighbors was killed like this. Blacks got into his house, shot him in front of his family. And many of these things, the police do absolutely nothing. The police don't even investigate a crime. They never recover the stolen goods. They never even go after the criminals. And that's a cause of deep embitterment. And that is why whites have built fences around their houses and electric fences. I've got razor wire, 8-foot walls, that kind of thing. That's the norm. And we do what we can. Nowadays, whites even do neighborhood watches and stuff. And, of course, there are security companies.
Mm-hmm.
Oranje was an experiment, and they decided to do this in the early 1990s. They got some people together, and they bought a chunk of land in a semi-desert area. The idea was to isolate the whites as much as possible from everybody else, so that the whites could just function as a community by themselves and see how it would go. It's illegal to do what they did, so the way they did it was they did it by forming a company, a special kind of company. So Oranje isn't a political entity, it's a business entity. And I went there in 2010, and I was very impressed. It was about 10,000 whites. They'd built their own houses. They totally built their own setup. They were farming for themselves. They even had small factories, and everything was run by whites, which is unique in Southern Africa for us. We're not used to that. And I've got to tell you, I was very impressed. I liked it. And in recent years, I've seen other smaller communities also doing things. There's one near Pretoria, which is also Christian. It's got about 500 whites living on a farm. They are Christians, and they've worked together, and it's all white labor. Everything is done by whites, and that's also been quite a success. I was very impressed with that. So the Boers, the more Afrikaans-speaking people, have spoken often about whether we should aim for a white state. And that has been the Boer dream, because the Boers used to have states, and in fact that is what the Anglo-Boer War was about. Britain fought the Boers twice and seized their states on two occasions. And on the one occasion, the Boers drove them out later. But I also, when I wrote my book, Government by Deception, my viewpoint was that for the sake of security, number one, we have to defend ourselves. because it is clear that the blacks and the government have no interest in defending us at all. So we must defend ourselves first and foremost to a point where we are comfortable that we feel safe, because we see what the police do. And let me tell you, in South Africa, the only reason that people even go to the police is in order to go and report a crime so that you have a case number. And then you go to the insurance company to go and claim the damages. That is the only thing the police do. And other than that, the police are only worried about whether you've got traffic fines or whether they must take your firearms away. Other than that, they don't care. And that, you know what, Tara, in South Africa, most of the crimes, when a crime is committed, most of the criminals that are caught by private security companies. They sometimes have gunfights with the criminals. When the gunfight is over and the criminals have been caught, only then will the South African police pitch up. And do you know, I know people who've caught black criminals in their suburbs, in their properties. They've taken the criminal to the police, and the police let him go.
Mm-hmm.
And all this kind of behavior has made whites realize that, you know what, this system isn't working for us, and there is no intention for this system to ever work for us. And I am one of those Boers who believes that the only future for us is to stand together as one and to ultimately work for our own state. We need to aim as a goal for some place where we can physically seize land and defend ourselves and live as a group by ourselves. That is the only practical future that we can have, other than, of course, just packing our bags and leaving, which is not easy. You can get into Britain and America and Europe if you are non-white. Nigerians can come to Britain. There are 600,000 Zimbabwean middle class who fled to Britain when Mugabe was driving out 5,000 white farmers. Britain would take in 600,000 blacks, but it won't take in 5,000 whites. So these are among the dilemmas we face. I'm a believer that our solution must be for us to work together. I don't believe we are as totally buggered as other people think. We do, many of us have houses, we still have assets. Another thing that's happened with the whites is so many whites were driven out of what we could call official employment, that what has happened is quite a lot of whites are now working from home. And you could say that we are starting cottage industries. And these little cottage industries are actually doing quite well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Whites are very industrious at the best of times, so and at the worst of times. So it doesn't surprise me that you're doing that. It's horrible to think about. I mean, what I'd like to ask you is, firstly, is there any way maybe listeners can help the situation, or what would you like? Most medicines are American and European. What would you like them to hear?
You know, this is an interesting one. The main thing that I would like is for word to spread. The more we can tell other whites, and also, a lot of what is happening to you whites in Britain, Europe, America, and so forth are actually the same things that happened to us. It's just happening in a slightly different fashion, but nowadays your countries are the places that are targeted for diversity. When I was a kid, they told us that white rule in Rhodesia was a bad thing because we were colonialists. So that was the crime of the white people then. It was colonialism. Then when I came to South Africa, they were telling the whites of South Africa, because South Africa was no longer a colony, South Africa was a internationally recognized republic, and it was run by whites. They had proper self-rule. They did not have to give anything away. They were the legitimate government, and Britain had created this state, and they had continued with this state. They had now introduced apartheid, but there had been some apartheid under British rule as well. It just wasn't called by that name. And these whites were then told that their crime was apartheid. So mm-hmm. apartheid became the crime of those whites. Now the rest of you whites in Britain, Europe, and America, your crime now is that you aren't diversified enough. You are too white. Your problem and your crime is that you are too white. So all that I've seen in my life is that every time the communists and the elite and the non-whites get in on this act, they come up with some new bogus reason as to why white people have to be destroyed, why their countries have to be destroyed. And even in Europe, where whites have lived for 45,000 years, there's now talk that whites won't be a majority. And I think even in Britain, I saw an article in the Telegraph, I think it was, some mm-hmm. years ago. I think they said by 2065, you won't be majority white, I think.
Okay, yeah, I haven't heard about statistic myself, but I'm in London and already whites are less than 50% of the population. But it seems like even worse than that from what I can see when I walk outside. So yeah, it's not good. Obviously, that is the trend. You know, in parts of Europe, the birth rate is only 1.3, which is half of what we need for replacement rates. What's the birth rate like in South Africa for whites?
I can't give you a number there. About the only good news I can say is that, strangely enough, the poorest whites, the poorer and lower class whites, they actually still have a pretty decent birth rate. It's mm-hmm. actually the middle class and upper class that have got a lower birth rate. But I also think that it's at best only replacement. It's hard to say. I don't have a statistic. Yeah, but maybe. Yes, that is a racial problem across the world for white people, yes.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think what do you think the differences are between the races that cause these problems?
I really believe that it's an IQ issue. Mm-hmm. I really believe that that's what it boils down to. And there have been many studies done on aptitude. I've worked with many blacks. I've worked with all kinds. We've got Asians here in South Africa too. We've got an Indian community. I've worked with all of them, and I've seen how the races are different. There are videos I've done, Tara, that as I put my new videos up and you're on my mailing list, you will see these videos. I did a whole video with Alex Linder about the workplace and blacks and diversity and so forth. And you can see very clearly the racial, you can see clearly that everything that whites knew more than 100 years ago, whites more than 100 years ago knew about IQ, they knew about the differences between the races, they were openly talking about it. All of those things are actually true facts, and they're as true today as ever before. And you can see it even in South Africa. In South Africa, we have different races. Even now, when you fill in forms, you have to still specify your race. They either say race or ethnicity. So the races in South Africa are white, black, colored being mixed race, halfway between black and white, and then there's Indian or Asian. Those are the four races that are commonly recognized in South Africa. I worked in a multiracial organization, and you can clearly see the differences between the IQ of the different races. You can see the Asians are clever. You can even see the different temperaments of the different groups. And those groups themselves can see the same thing. The only thing that I believe that white people globally have been lied to, misled, and targeted specifically for destruction, but it's been a gradual program. Whether you call it cultural Marxism or whatever it is, there's been a program to lie to white people on a grand scale. And it's almost shocking the extent of the lies that whites have been brought to believe and that their governments and officials openly state as facts, which are not so. And liberalism, I've come to regard liberalism as the biggest con job intended to destroy white people, because it breaks down all of the factual racial truths. It just totally ignores them, and the people who suffer the most are the white people. Yeah. It is a system designed to destroy white countries. And one of the things that I think whites outside of Africa can learn is, by watching our experiences and our history, you can see all of this playing itself out in the real world, and you will see the proofs that liberalism is utter rubbish and totally untrue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a scam, actually. It's a global scam against white people. And I'll tell you why we lost. As much as we were outnumbered, we did not lose because we were too few or too weak. Even in the wars that we fought, as outnumbered as we did very well. We were actually never really beaten, actually. What really destroyed us was that America, Britain, and the rest of the Western world openly worked to destroy us. They did not support us. You get a country like Israel. Israel gets something like $3 billion worth of aid every year from America. It has a population of 7 million people. When I was in Rhodesia and we were 250,000 whites, Britain put global world sanctions on us. The United Nations declared us a threat to world peace. They put total sanctions on us. The British Navy would go into the Indian Ocean and intercept oil tankers to stop oil coming to the whites of Rhodesia. And we were not allowed to trade with any nation in the world. We traded secretly, I must tell you. We did trade secretly. There were planes that would fly off to some destination in Europe and they do a secret deal. But of course, these things come at a cost. And we were a tiny group of whites. Our main trading was done with South Africa. And later, when the South Africans came under pressure, they too were threatened with world sanctions and stuff. The biggest thing that's worked against the whites of Southern Africa is that we don't have the support of the other white people out there. Despite our situation, I'm telling you, if we had moral and other support from whites, they don't even have to give money, they just have to stand up for us. If you whites in other countries could just help to spread the word and stand up for us, that can change our situation. And if we had a bit of support, even 10% of the white race out there was willing to support us in one way or another, we could stand our ground and survive and even prosper right here in Southern Africa. We can do it. And I also believe I'm very much a blood and soil kind of a person. White people build countries that are awesome. And we have every reason to be proud of everything we've built everywhere, even in Africa, even in America. We've done great things wherever we go. And I very much believe that we should not be abandoning our position in Africa just because of some liberal and some black. We have, you know, it starts getting into the whole thing of world history. Who lives where and who owns what? And people do move around in history. People do migrate to certain degrees. Mm-hmm. The blacks themselves are colonizers, as are Asians, as are others. We have not committed any crimes that are any worse than that of any other race. In fact, the greatest genocide in the history of South Africa is a genocide that occurred in the 1820s when the Zulus came and they slaughtered 1.4 million blacks in the center of South Africa. That is the greatest genocide in the history of South Africa. And the Boers, when the Boers came to the center of South Africa, they came here because this place was literally uninhabited. That is why they came here. So, you know, there's a lot of bogus rubbish reasons given why white people must be giving up their countries, giving up their jobs, giving up their businesses. And it's bogus everywhere. But if we whites work together, then we will all survive and there will be a future for everybody.
Great message. Please let all the viewers and listeners know where they can find out more about your work, for example, your website.
Okay, my main website is called historyreviewed.com. I also have historyreviewed.info and africancrisis.org. But if you go to historyreviewed.com, you can leave a message for me there in the comments section. And I do also have a mailing list. And if I can give those details to you afterwards, then that would be great. Then people can also email me.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'll put those in the description if that's what you want me to do. So thanks to everyone for listening. Obviously, this is a really important show. People are literally living in fear for their lives in South Africa right now, and it appears to only be getting worse. So we really need to spread this message. One way you can help do that is to share this video in social media. And another way is to find some of Jan's resources and share those as well. So it's no one else is going to do this for us. Mainstream media isn't going to do it. We have to do it. So I'm going to say thanks again, Jan, and I'll catch you guys in the next episode. Goodbye.